Good.
We are going to go ahead and start our work session. It is Wednesday, June 26th at 6:01 p.m. And we are meeting the CWO's meeting center. And we are talking all things water today. Actually, not all things, specifically in the drinking area.
All right, so we're going to start with, I want the council to really get a sense of how our secondary water system works and the issues that we face in the system, and really kind of giving an overview of the next few years, the challenge we're going to face. Recently, state legislation passed that required states to put together a report that stated how they intended to put together a secondary metering plan. So the 18th is kind of part of this plan, and we start working on ours. They're due on December 31st, 2019, so we've got a little bit of time. However, we want to make sure that we are doing it right. Okay. So I wanted to actually take the first 10, 15 minutes and have Jeff just go walk through how our system works, so that you understand where the sources are, the challenges that we face in terms of delivering water to each home, and maybe get a better sense of what the infrastructure is that we were talking about.
Our irrigation system is divided into four different pressure zones, which is kind of how we operate internally in maintaining it. Everything from on the east side of Canyon Road, from one end of the city to the other, is all on our upper pressure zone. This comes from the tank that's up on the hill.
I still don't see that it's working. Oh,
mm-hmm.
Is that one in that other case? Where's that from?
The upper tank is up on the mountain, in which we supply the water through a series of pumps. Now, this is by far the largest pressure drop or pressure zone that we have. The second zone, or the lower zone, is everything east or west of Canyon Road and south of Cedar Hills Drive. And then it goes up Redwood Road, and it's west of Redwood Road, incorporating some of the Forest Creek area. And that water comes out of our pond 17, and it's not regulated for pressure. It's just strictly gravity. Our middle zone is in between the two, our third zone, and we do have pressure regulating from the upper zone to feed that center zone. It's quite a bit smaller than either of the other two. And then we have one very small zone on the Lake Shore Trail subdivision. It just involves a dozen houses in that area. Our main sources of the water our biggest source would come out of this area in Pond 10. That's where we kind of start the system. And we have the Canyon Well, which we can operate about 1,000 gallons a minute that we put in on 10. We also have this North CUP turnout, we can get 3 acre feet a minute, actually get up almost 4, then they provide a lot of water for us, and then we have the ditch coming out of the American Fork River, and currently the ditch providing a big share of our water this spring. Whenever we have the budget, we try to take advantage of that, save our other resources. This water supplies most of the city with the water that we use. We bring that water, we pump it up the hill on 12, we have 4 pumps. On 12 is kind of a staging area in which we can divide it up, and we pump it up onto the tank up on the mountainside, or we can gravity feed it around the golf course into this pond 17. That's where the division takes place. Everything in these two ponds feeds all the upper zone. And that's really our only water source available for the upper zone. The lower zone, we can also use our cottonwood well to fill pond 17. And we have a turnout at the very south end of town in which we can get CUP water. It's not pressurized enough anymore for supplying the city, so we have upgraded a small booster pump there. We just finished that this year, and then we can now take this water from central Utah and get it into pond 17. And in the meantime, just passing through the system, it can supply the lower zone, and then we can reserve it in 17. Pond 18 is an irrigation pond, but that's strictly for golf course use. And it gets its water from 17. We gravity feed it into 17. And we have some issues that have been addressed in the past by some of the citizens, in that we have high water pressure down in the very lowest part of the city. That water has a regulator called the ISO, and we have to reduce this pressure that's coming off of the tank, but we reduce it enough that these guys can still have irrigation, but try not to be too high in this very lowest area. It's very difficult to to regulate that because of the elevation changes. And there has been some internal discussion about, you know, options that we have, that we can create additional zones for pressure. Our main pressure reducing valve is just behind the townhomes. The water elevation change is significant between the tank and that point. At that point, we can reduce the pressure. Again, we have to maintain enough. These residents have very low water pressure to operate their sprinkler systems. But in order to keep the pressures downhill reasonable, that's how we manage it. These individuals end up with significantly higher pressures. And again, we looked at creating different zones in order to do that. Our system is similar to our culinary system, where that everything is looped. So it's difficult to just divide areas into small areas and maintain our flow because of the diameter of our pipes are small, but they're all connected, so that the volume of water can come from different directions at any given time for the citizens. A few years ago, some of you probably remember that we had issues with pressures in this area being significantly lower. We upgraded, putting a few like the check valves and the directional valves, and then upgraded this booster pump. And that we do have significantly better pressures for those residents at this time. When we finish that project this summer, we know we haven't had any real pressure issues anywhere within the city. Other than we have high pressure, but we can't really regulate it. As far as irrigation, that's our sources. We utilize Cockrell well pretty much continually through the summer to offset the amount of water we need. This year we have been very fortunate, I would say, been able to use ditch water to save a significant use on directly from our wells. I don't know if there's specific questions that anybody might have for our water system.
I have a question.
Yes.
So this year, with all this runoff, what's the difference between this year and last year as far as how much water you have to do back to last year as opposed to this year?
We'll show that. Yeah, okay. I think Shannon's got some charts to demonstrate that, but it is quite significant. We've been able to run pretty much all of our upper zone irrigation strictly through the ditch water. And so it makes quite a difference. I don't know if there's much more detail that you want. I mean, we do have some other pressure regulating valves in the system. But
so my question for you, can you explain, some other cities sometimes will show that, you know, comparison city by city, what cost is, what their utility costs are. And oftentimes Cedar Hills is one of the higher ones. And part of that is because how much we're pumping water, so we have higher electrical costs and all of that. Can you take a minute just to explain how those factors play into our fee and why we put tanks on that hillside when you have to pump water up to it?
Yes, in the original design, both the culinary and the irrigation tank high on the mountain side was designed to be significantly lower. When they excavated to do the installation, they found a secondary fault line to the Wasatch fault line directly under the tank location. So they had to reevaluate. They couldn't go lower because we didn't have property lower, so they went higher. And that's how we ended up in the location where we are. That just caused a significant increase in the cost of our water for the upper zone in particular. As we come out in this area, well, the central Utah water is probably our most expensive water cost-wise to have the rights to that. To have it delivered. But then our well water, as you know, we have very good sized motors pumping that water out. And once we get the water into this pond, then we have five pumps to pump it in pond 12, then we have six pumps to pump from 12 up to the tank, and all of the costs to move that water up to the tank is lost because we bring it back down the mountain and then we have to reduce the pressure before we can use it, service it. So we have a significant cost disadvantage from other jurisdictions simply because of how much we have to move the water. A lot of the water that comes out of 17 in the past was being pumped through these large pumps and then gravity feeding it. If we turn Cockrell well on a 500 horsepower motor, it consumes a lot of electricity, and it will utilize that. Like I say, in the last 2 years, it's run pretty much continually through the summer. And our biggest cost of the water is our pumping fees.
Was there just not a location elsewhere that we could put it that would have allowed us to use gravity and less?
It was pretty limited from my understanding. That was well before the time I got here when it was developing the golf course early on. The the availability of property at an elevation high enough to provide pressures for the upper developments. Pretty much mandated that it be not quite as high as it is, but significantly higher. We're right now, pressures are only in 40-pound range, 42-pound range on the upper houses. Canyon Heights is similar. When we put it into this area, they're right in that same 40, 42 pounds. Most of your sprinkler system designs are wanting 50, 60 minimum. So they're challenged to get their irrigation systems designed to work properly. Once we drop down in elevation, we have all the lower areas, and they have way too much pressure in there. They have opposite problems of spraying water out such high pressure, it mists, and it doesn't actually go out on the lawn, it just evaporates and goes into the air. So we have some opportunities to look at in reducing consumption through better watering methods. If we have individual residents have pressure meter, pressure regulators on their system, they could water a lot more efficiently. That's where our costs come from.
Yes. Jeff, these pressure regulators, can people do this now? Is that something they can put on themselves, or is that something the city has to do?
No, they can put it on their individual systems. Have to qualify that somewhat because they're high maintenance issue because we're providing dirty water. It's not like culinary water. So sediments will get into the regulators and cause them to malfunction sooner. So they're high maintenance proposal, which most people don't care to have. So they are options. And as we look at doing it as a city, then we have to look at redesigning piping systems so we can eliminate looping all of our interconnected lines so they don't sit around water and circulate us. That's kind of where we're at with irrigation.
Thank you. I want the council to kind of understand that because, like I said, sometimes I've seen very recently that there's this comparison going around between city and city, what their water bill is, and there's a lot more that goes into it than just we have water and we need to supply it. For us, we've got all of these unique challenges. And I think Alpine has access to a natural spring that's all around the river, so they have either none or probably close to zero pumping costs. And so,
yeah, it's around 30,000. And then they're not buying any water, so that's another savings of 130. We pay like 400,000 more just right there.
Wow. And it's just because of where we're located versus
and how fast our city grew, we took on debt in a short amount of time versus their city kind of grew slowly.
What we have seen, and it's related to our cost, is the life expectancy of our equipment. Not only is it costly to actually operate pumps, but as we get into the lifespan, which is where we're at now, we're seeing more failures of significant pieces of our equipment, and we have the maintenance and replacement costs on those. That is a lot to do with our location. Well, all to do with the location.
Thanks, Jeff.
If I was to list the biggest challenge facing the city in the next 5 years, I would put water in top two.
As far as getting it, providing it?
Yes.
Already?
Okay. It's beyond it. Jeff kind of touched on it in that. We're running a system that's designed for a certain capacity, and it'd be like taking your car on I-15 and then just flooring the gas from here to Gilmore, and then stopping and then coasting to your city, and then flooring it again. That's what we do to our system. For the irrigation season from April 15th to October 15th, where on a typical year, this is an atypical year, on a typical year we redline, we're pumping, we're seeing tanks empty every night down to a certain level, and we fill them up during the day and they empty. Even on Sunday when nobody's watering, they empty and we fill them up. So it's a very constant problem.
And then still July and August that we're pumping all of our culinary water from cotton well into the PI system?
Say it again.
For a while, in July and August, we were pumping all our culinary water from cotton well into the PI system.
We've done that before. We've done that before, yeah. Sorry to think about that. In 2013, the city contracted with Hanson, Allen, and Lewis to do a study on our pressurized irrigation system. And I want to show you some of the results from that. They came in and they measured our usage, and this is a snapshot of 1 year from May to October. This dark line represents actual usage in the city. And the light blue line represents the state recommended usage. So you can see that during the month of August, and this must have been just an abnormally hot August and then abnormally dry August, but you can see that we're about double what we should be. That's a snapshot of 1 year. On a typical day, this is a typical demand curve on a day. So each one of these represents an hour of the day, and this represents the amount of demand of water. So from midnight to about 8 in the morning, you have a high demand, and it drops off during the day. So at least people aren't watering during the most inefficient time, at least for the most part. And then this is what gives us a chance to catch up and fill the tanks again. And then once you hit, you know, 11 o'clock, you start seeing that, 10, 11 o'clock, you start seeing that ramp up again. And that's a daily cycle that goes through each day. We've been tracking this for, let's say, 5 years now, or 5th year of tracking our water usage. And we've tried to do it on a week-to-week basis. We started in 2014. In 2014, we did not have watering restrictions, but we did track how much water we were pumping out and using throughout the city. And that is this dark, or this lighter blue line here. So you can follow it. And week one is the first week of April out to October. So during the hot summer months, you see spike, and in August, we must have had a really wet August in 2014. So you start seeing people shut off their sprinklers in August, and then it came back up, get back to this curve. But you can see a natural usage curve throughout the year. In 2015, 16, 17, we've had watering restrictions. So you have the audio watering restrictions, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, no new waters on Sunday. Supposedly. But you see, if you compare the light blue versus these other years, you see that there's not much difference. So watering, the actual watering restrictions, watering enforcement, having somebody going out in the middle of the night and tagging doors, and it just doesn't, it's not an effective way to inform people. It's an effective way to aggravate people, but it's not an effective way to get people to change behavior. This year, like Jeff said, Councilman Anderson, you touched on it, we've had an extremely wet winter. And so you see that people really hesitated to turn on their sprinkling systems during April and May for these months. So that's why you see it being so low. But now we're getting to be where it's a little bit drier, and you see that come back up. So we anticipate that as the year goes on, this is going to come back into the normal curve. You see that at the end of the year. But the Hanson Allen Lewis study, what I'm going to read right from it, says the city of Cedar Hills evaluated pressurized irrigation system demand for the 2013 irrigation season. It says last year the pressurized irrigation system operated above its design capacity. The city is concerned that continued long-term operation of the PI system at or above its intended capacity limits will result in premature failure of key system components and cause unreliable system performance. Future growth within the city will exacerbate this condition. Now, we don't have tight growth. At this point in the city, we estimated the city is 90% built out. We're maybe 92%.
with Cedar Canyon coming, they're turning over water rights to us, but the problem isn't necessarily the amount of water right now. The problem is getting the water and delivering it to the home in an efficient manner. This is a map of our city, but it looks like our streets. It may be a little bit difficult to see that. Once again, I apologize, but this is reading the velocity, how fast water is moving through the pipe. It is not good for water to run through the pipe faster than 5 feet per second. And that's what this yellow is 5 feet per second. Red is 7 feet per second. When you have 7 feet per second, you have a high risk of system failure. You have a high risk of breaks. So we've seen that in past years. We've seen on Oregon, where you have this 5 feet per second line right here and suddenly 7 feet per second. This is where we've had breaks before. We had a break over here as well at the entrance to the Cedars subdivision. Now those weren't necessarily the result of pressure. There were some errors in how they were installed, but pressure exacerbated the problem in these instances. But what we see here is water that's moving through the pipes that's going too fast. And this is, and hands down, they did a model where it showed kind of a daily usage over time. And what you saw is it was like a flexing system. You see the pressures go, these pressures and the velocities in the pipes go red and they go really high during the night, and then they come down during the day, and then they go back up during the night, and they come back down during the day. And what that does is that's where they're worried about the systemic failure in our system. And we've had a number of issues in the past with Cotton Well, we refurbished Harvey Well, and it still has issues. We've had issues with our Canyon Well, we've had issues with pumps at Pond 10 and Pond 12. And part of it is because of this redlining system. It's just not good for the system. So we're spending a lot of money also beyond the pumping costs, beyond the maintenance costs. We're having to spend a lot of money on the replacement costs, having to buy new water pumps, having to buy new pumps, having to dump more money into VFP, the variable frequency drives for the wells, so that we can keep up with the demand. That is an ongoing thing. So they talked about this Hansen Allen Newsom study was done in 2013. In that study, they estimated that, and these numbers, we found some errors in the way we calculated the numbers, but they're, so don't put a lot of weight in the actual number, but in 2013, it showed that between the middle of May and the end of October, so they're missing a whole month from beginning of April to the middle of May, they're estimating 712 million gallons of water in our system. In 2017, we estimated that there were 835 million gallons of water going through the system. Now, those numbers are subject to change in how you calculate it and based on an understanding of your well capacities or our tank capacities. But even if the numbers fluctuate a little bit, the principle there is that we're using a lot of water. And that's the underlying concern. The interesting thing on the Hansen Allen study, though, is I believe it's available online. Is it on our website?
I think so.
It's on our website.
It was at one time.
It can be back. You can put it back on our website, or we can email it out to you. But it's really interesting because what they do is they run through a number of scenarios where what would happen to the city's pressurized irrigation system if we had a well failure at Cotton Well or Harvey Well. What would happen if we had booster problems? What if we had what would happen if we had a meter? They run through all these situations and these scenarios and give some determinations of what would happen with the city. It's really interesting. Under scenario three, which is build out development with water conservation, they say under scenario three, this is with build out with water conservation, so you have secondary meters. The system behaves similar to scenario two, which is existing development with water conservation. It appears that the system has adequate capacity to meet build-out demands provided that water conservation goals are achieved. So that's the big thing, is we have the capacity, we have a system that works for our city our size, for a city of our population. location. It's just a matter of making sure that conservation goals are achieved. The state has put in goals that we reduce our water usage by 25% over the next few years, and that's where it comes in that we have to do a secondary meter plan. What was it? Was it 1852 last year? 52. Okay. But that mandated that the cities put together a secondary water meter plan. That's the one that's due on December 31st. We're going to start to work on it. But it has a number of requirements. The first requirement is that it says a secondary water supplier, that's the city, that begins design work for a new service on or after April 1st, 2020 to commercial, industrial, institutional, or residential users shall meter the use of pressurized secondary water by the users receiving that new service. So by April 1st, 2020, we have to have a plan in place for metering new connections. So we've worked with Bowen Calls. We have an adopted standard that we can use as a city. They're going to be implementing it down in Cedar Canyon, and all the development will have that. And the nice thing about that is that the cost of the new secondary connections are paid for by the developer, by the end user, it's not paid for us. So we're ready to implement that standard. Second regulation, it says a secondary water provider that provides pressurized or secondary water to a commercial, industrial, institutional, or residential user shall develop a plan for metering the use of pressurized water in accordance with subsection 3 of the contained. So it says we don't have to meter. We just have to have a plan to meter. How do we get there? So we're looking at three options right now. We're assuming whereabouts 2,500 connections in the city, and based on an estimate that Draper did for a Water Smart Grant, they're estimating $2,000 per connection. So what that translates to for us is $5 million if it was the same amount of money. We're looking at it, you can do a bond and do it all at once. You probably have some savings there on the mobilization costs, being able to do it all at once. Like I said, you're looking at hopefully $5 million. That's a conservative estimate, I would say. It could be lower than that. A five-year plan implementation plan where you're installing 500 connections per year, you're still looking at probably $1.2 million annually budgeted to install the meters. At 10 years, you're looking at 250 meters installed per year and $500,000 to $600,000 per year based on, and this is, well, this will fluctuate based on how easy it is for a connection. Some will be very easy, some will be very difficult.
Just FYI, Chandler, that study, the Hanson Island and Loose study, is summarized on the website. We did a town hall meeting about it in August of 2014 and reviewed it, and there's a PowerPoint and bullet points, but not the whole study.
And that's on the website? Anyway, and then the city has annual reporting requirements that when we're metering these connections, we have to then report that to the state. In my view, and I'm sure the mayor would agree with this, is that metering the household irrigation only solves part of the problem that Utah faces regarding water usage. The big user in Utah is agricultural land. I think, what is it, 8%? 82% of the water used in the state is used by ag land. So I feel like the households are the low-hanging fruit. It's farmers as well need to make serious adjustments in how they use water.
Well, and interestingly, the bill only targets cities and counties of first and second class, so it's not even all residential users, it's only counties that will have to do this.
So, there's some real flaws in the bill. So in 2015, we started doing water restrictions, even day restrictions, and I went in and pulled up how many water violations we've done every year. 2015 initial year, 243, 2016, 300, 2017, we must have been really nice that year, but 165, and then 325 last year. I already showed you the year-over-year usage compared to no water restrictions to having water restrictions. We started doing water restrictions again this year. We have an individual driving down the city and puts tags on the horse. I will be honest that it's great to inform people that they should be careful about their watering,
But what we see is that if my day is odd day or I'm an odd number and I have Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and I want to water, I will water in the morning and I will water at night. And then it's just like I was watering every day during the week. So what we've talked about as a staff, we've talked about the irrigation season. Ours is, we stay April 15th to October 15th. And cities do it differently. Even though that's the actual outdoor watering season for the state, some cities like Pleasant Grove, they kind of say May 1st, expect your water to be on, even though it's typically on prior to then. But they say May 1st. And usually nobody's really concerned about when it goes off. They're always concerned about when it goes off. There's a few that are concerned about when it goes off, but hey, we'll let us know. Highland does the same thing we do, which is April 14th, April 15th to October 15th, and then American Fork is a little more vague. They say mid-April to mid-October. What we're looking for is possibly to alter ours just a little bit so that it's adjusted. If you have a really wet water year, you can say, we're not going to turn the water on until May. We're going to turn it off a little bit earlier too, because it's been really wet. But it gives staff a little bit of flexibility. I think that would be very important.
Well, and the other thing is we want to have some flexibility as well, because when we have a set date, people expect it to be 100% usable by that date. And this year, we always had instances where sometimes we need to shut off a couple of streets while we fix some things because it's been on for 6 months, and then people are upset that it's not working. And so we want to give our staff some flexibility as well. We say, don't expect it's going to be at 100% on day one.
Yeah.
There's going to be some things.
I like the kind of giving them residents a range of when they can expect it, but also that when it's on, there could be issues where it has to be shut off again to address an issue that has come up or to make it over here.
Chairman?
Yes.
On that point, what we have recognized is that water starting at April 15th is as expensive of water as we can have all through the year. We don't have any water rights prior to that, so when we fill our pumps, we fill the system, and fill the ponds, we have to do that with pump water, our groundwater. So it's all our most expensive water. We don't get any CUP water, we don't get any ditch water prior to April 15th. So if we're ready to go on the 15th, and we've paid the price to be ready. If we was to delay that by 3, 4, 5 days, then we can utilize the ditch water, we can get CUP water, and it does help in that aspect.
Yeah. So I think what we're looking for is we would like staff to have some flexibility to shift that window from April 14th, 15th to April 23rd, you know, and just make it a year-by-year call. And we would advertise that saying, city will be energizing your system on this day. Expect issues, there could be shutoffs. I think we have to be very clear in that messaging and how we send that out. But on the residents' end, I think they've understood that this year there really wasn't a whole lot of demand for water. When we built tanks this year, and they didn't go down because it was raining every day.
It was people that had just leaked the city that they were worried about, they needed to water it. I guess
we're kind of
about grassy, but.
Yeah, that is a concern a lot of people have. So you will want to advertise that so that they can plan it ahead. So if they're laying sod, they're laying seed, they can do that appropriately at the appropriate time. But as we move forward, the city has to, I think, we've adopted city code that allows for residents to do some zero escaping in their front yard. We've deregulated that people have to, within a year of moving in, they have to put in a yard, and we do allow for zero escaping. We've talked in the past about city doing zero escape on sections of our grass or our land, specifically park strips. The caveat there is that it is more expensive to maintain zero escape than it is grass. Grass can roll really fast. Zero escape, you have to weed. It takes more time. So there is an associated cost there. But this big problem, if the city is going to be preaching we need to be conserving water, I think that we have to, on some level, show that we take it seriously for ourselves. And I know that we do, and I spoke with an individual last week who, they had a golf tournament here, a couple weeks ago, and I said, of course, it was great, it was green, it was lush,
But you mentioned a few years ago when we came to golf, there was a lot of dry spots in the golf course. Well, that's because we put the golf course on water restrictions. It's very big to call. So we have tried to lead out in the past, but I don't know whether those are always visible to the public. Usually our sins are visible, so when we have sprinklers spraying in the street, we hear about that. Janae and I have spoken about incentive programs where you can install a smart meter and show us some identification on it that we can exempt you from water restrictions. That's something the staff can track as a program we can look into.
I just so the council's feedback on that. So we know watering restrictions aren't working, and so one of the complaints that I get often from residents is from the people who want to conserve, and they say, I only want to water every third day, but you force me to water every other day because of the way that the watering restrictions are set up. And so, and a lot of them have smart controllers, and so they can set their smart controller to only come on when it's needed, but then if it comes on, they're not supposed to be watering. Anyway. So one of the things that Chandler and I talked about was saying, okay, what if we get a program saying if you purchase a smart controller, and there are rebates you can get through
Central Utah.
Well, they'll pay up to 50% of it, I think, to like $100 or whatever. Anyway, if you have a smart controller and you can show to the city, and we need some kind of identification, so everyone, you know, people are using the same picture, but
He's like, they usually come with some serial numbers.
So we would have to do some tracking on our end. But basically, if you have that, then we will exempt you from watering restrictions because we want you to only use water when you need it. And if it's every third day, or if it's raining and your smart controller doesn't come on at all the whole week, that's great. I don't agree about it making our water use worse because nothing's been improved by having water restrictions. And so I think for the people who are trying to conserve it, we do it every third day, $150 for them is worth it to be able to do that. So I'm curious to know if the council would be supportive of something like that. I think that's a great idea.
So I just installed one of those native pointless clocks where I got a 50% rebate, actually have the money in my hand, and it was easy to switch out. But I did notice that it does sort of water on a really unique.
Mm-hmm.
It watches the weather and the wind and all kinds of stuff. So sometimes the water's like 2 days in a row. It's really weird. I can't get a pattern on it yet. But
it learns as it goes. It really nice ones will kind of learn more about your environment. But they pull information from local weather stations, which I don't know where the nearest weather station is here, but
I think they say BG on it, but I'm not sure. But it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Show you on my app, my water usage and stuff.
Yeah, we have them as well, and it definitely keeps water out when it's been raining.
When it was raining, I didn't have to worry about it going shutting off or anything.
Yeah. Nice. And so there's always the risk that somebody who has it is just going to water every day because you can override smart controller for sure. But I would imagine if you're willing to spend $100 on a smart controller, it's because you want it to work the way it's supposed to.
I mean, mine's only six station. It's $100. I got $50 back, so I'm not going to have $50. So.
Yeah. Which is almost as much as your controller costs anyway.
Right. I think it's less, actually.
But the city's been, I just want to add this as well. The city's been approached by certain providers of the smart water controllers trying to get us to team up with a specific one and push it to the residents. This is not in lieu of a secondary water meter. If the city is required to pursue a plan for secondary water meters, this does not exempt people from installing a secondary water meter. It's kind of like I have a Nest thermostat in my house which regulates the temperature, but I still have a meter on the outside of my house telling me how much gas is going in my house. But it's, I'm just being more efficient on my end. And these smart controllers really pay off in the event that the city does go to a secondary meter program just because you'll be way more efficient than trying to guess what your water needs are anymore.
Well, and most people are not really, right? So they can't turn off their water and they're worried about forgetting to turn it back on. And that's why for a lot of people, you just turn it on in the spring and set it and don't worry about it again. What smart control takes all of that.
Jeff, anything I'm missing around?
Yeah, just one comment on that. The metering, the smart controllers I'm very much in favor of, especially if they have an external rain delay device on them, because then it it works right within this immediate area. But the state water rules, when we do our annual water report, one of the biggest concerns that the state is given to us is they want to know what water loss is within systems. As we go to trainings, older cities, Ogden was one of the presenters one time, and they have a significant amount of water leaks and water losses. Our system's relatively new, it's in good condition, and we don't know how much water loss we have, and that's the state's concern, is we can report how much water we generate, how much we provide, but we can't demonstrate how much loss we have because we don't know what the end user use is. So until we can determine end user use, we have no way to monitor our system for loss. And that's what they want to know. What is your water loss? We're like, we don't know, we can't tell you that. Well, the law says you're gonna report that. And we're like, well, you can't do it unless you measure on both ends of the pipe. And so that's one of the concerns that we have as staff, is trying to meet their requirements, and realistically, we can't do that.
I have to imagine that that's true for most cities. It's mostly not metered right now.
Correct. It's a statewide issue. I mean, it's not just Cedar Hills. Yeah. But that is their goal, and that's their requirement currently. And they're like, well, we already require you to meter because you have to provide water loss. And everybody's like, well, we can't. Yeah. We don't have that capability. So.
The way the legislation is going, though, it seems like at some point they will mandate the cities regulate or meter every connection that they have with their system.
Some cities.
Some cities, yeah.
So I have a question about how do you know how much water each person should get? Is it just determined by lot size?
It's
how are you going to do that?
We don't really determine how much they should get.
You're just going to charge per usage.
It's going to be based on irrigable areas. So you want to take their lot and net out the where their home sits, and the patio, they have driveway, where their driveway is, and where they're watering. That's what they should be based on. They'll fit into a tiered system if it's, you know, between 1/10 of an acre and a quarter acre and 3 acre.
Do you have to do individual home?
Most of them are already done. I mean, because they're already pay a base rate based on their lot size. Mm-hmm. So they're already classified. So that's done.
Are you talking about how they're paying now?
No, like when it's metered.
So right now, in the metering one, it really would come down to just pure usage.
Mm-hmm. So like whole area.
That size, because they're paying a different rate based on the size of their lot.
Yeah.
And that would naturally translate into a higher rate. If I have 3 acres that I need to irrigate, I'm going to be paying more, even if I'm conserving water, than the guy that's using half an acre.
Yeah.
No, that's not quite. There would still be a base rate for the debt.
There would still be a base rate.
Or the investment the city made to provide.
Right, but the usage. The usage right now is based on acreage.
You would still be paying a base rate, but you would still be having to pay as well for a usage rate. It would be similar to your car system.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
Any other questions?
Plus, I'd be a little scared. Just this is a finance of me. I look at Saratoga Springs, this meter, I'm like, how are they going to cover their debt coverage this last 2 months? Because they got no one using their sprinklers. Yeah, so you have to have that base rate in there to cover downtimes and uptimes.
Yeah.
It can't be all just based on usage, or you would have a really hard time budgeting.
You have to take a page out of it. Like the Weber District, they install the meters, and then they had a couple of years of education for the residents to say, here's what we're going to do. Build at the same rate you've always been built at. But when we go to building at a usage rate, this is going to go a little bit. So you have to really put forward the effort to educate people.
Well, and I really don't like that the state has their guidelines of how much everyone should be using, because it's this one size, every city, every household should be using the same formula. And that's just not the reality. I mean, you could get we, because where we're located, we have different challenges that change how much water you need to use. So, but with meters, that's not going to matter. They really are going to have all this. Those counties go towards paying for what you use in the homes that it will serve. Which again, I think if we are encouraging our residents now to get smart controllers, will help them with those meters, because if they're using less water, they'll be paying less on their water. Okay, so everyone's fine with staff coming up with that kind of a incentive program, right?
Great.
Okay. And looking at some city properties that we can there escape. It would be non-usable grass. It wouldn't be where people are playing.
Yeah, parks too.
That's
so,
great idea.
Yeah, I like that.
Okay. So I have any questions for me?
Thank you.
We have minutes, so let's just go
ahead and
adjourn.
Someone wants to make a motion.
Okay, by Councilor